Because someone won a contest, and definitely not because it's Black History Month, we discuss the film BAPS.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
And over there is Elliot Kalin.
And right across from me saying that thing is Stuart Wellington.
And we are...
The Flophouse.
Podcast.
Dear Flophouse.
Why are we German all of a sudden?
I don't know.
And wouldn't it be Das Flophouse?
And it'd be Das Floppenhouse.
Das Floppenhausen.
Okay, let's start all over
again. Okay.
Welcome. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Elliot Wellington.
I'm Stuart Kalin.
And we are...
The Floppin' House.
Rated R.
It's playing at... Wait, we're not doing the same
thing. No, we're not doing that bit right now.
Okay, so thanks for tuning in. We're a podcast. We talk about bad movies after we watch them.
Yep, and did
because
we
Because if we tried to do it before we watched them...
We'd be like, is this movie going to be bad? I don't know. We don't have much to talk about.
How was your day, fellows? That's what we would say.
Yeah.
Talking to
Julian Fellows.
So, normally we watch a newish bad movie, and by newish I mean
Jewish.
New,
a Jewish bad movie like the Yiddish Vampire or
a Serious Man.
No, Serious Man's a good movie.
Or Dracula, Dead and Loving It.
Yeah, or Dracula. The one where he's Jewish.
But
Nosferatu. And let's not forget A Vampire in Brooklyn.
Yep.
He's in the Orthodox section of Williamsburg.
Yeah, exactly. He's mostly, instead of sucking people's blood, he's mostly angry at cyclists.
Yeah, well, here's the problem, is it's not kosher to eat blood, but he's got to because he's a vampire.
And he drives a really awesome minivan hearse.
Yeah, and his mother's always like, have you heard of my son, the vampire? He could have been a doctor, but no, a vampire. That joke, copyright 1956.
So anyway, we normally watch a movie that is new.
From the past year or so. We like to limit ourselves.
Yeah, something new to DVD or video on demand usually. But in this case, we watched a film that was requested by our contest winner. You may remember that we had a He's the House Cat, parentheses Arthur's Theme music video contest.
And there were some fantastic entries.
Amazing.
I would call it our most successful contest.
Based on the quality of the work provided, yes.
But not based on the quality of the movie we had to watch.
No, because the jerk who won the contest...
Wow!
Byrne!
David Byrne.
He decided that we should watch the movie BAPS.
Hey guys, you should watch the movie BAPS. That was David Byrne winning the contest.
Yeah. Oh, wow, that's a really good impression.
Thank you.
BAPS is B asterisk... A asterisk.
No, B period.
P asterisk.
Period.
On the poster, it's asterisk.
No, it's clearly.
It's totally asterisk.
It's
like
initials,
MASH.
Though. It's not like how Neo Tokyo is about to E-X-P-L-O-D-E-E-. How many dash, how many asterisks is.
If you look at the poster, if you go to IMDb, those are asterisks.
They're footnotes to the title, is what you're saying. Yes.
All related to the same thing for some reason.
Yeah, because otherwise it'd be an asterisk, a cross, double crosses, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And that stands for Black American Princesses, which is something that is not explained by the movie until the very end.
And it's not even really explained until at the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of slur, as Elliot pointed out,
very
based
much a
on
slur.
A Jewish slur.
It is the, I guess, black version of a anti-Jewish slur, but it is used as a term of endearment at the end. When Academy Award winner Martin Landau expresses his love for future Academy Award winner Halle Berry in this movie called BAPS.
And her friend, played by...
Actress TVD. Wow, Dan. That's kind of bro humor we're trying to avoid.
That is... I say that only in that the movie seems to only define her as... chubby friend to Halle Berry.
They have two. Each character has one. Then okay, so there's Halle Berry and there's Natalie Dassel Reed is the other.
Thanks, Elliot.
She went on to be America's sweetheart.
Thank Wikipedia. But they are best friends, and they each have one character trait. Natalie's she has a couple. Natalie plays the character of Mickey.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey is
so fine. She's so fine. She blows my mind.
I didn't know you were into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like a real Martin Landau over there.
There's Mickey, who is a good cook and sassy, as they both are.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Overweight and also
prone
to argue. And there's Niecy, played by Halle Berry, whose character trait is wants to be a fly girl. And that's about it.
Also prone to argue.
Prone to argue, sassy, and so forth.
Now, I feel like we'll be picking our words even more carefully than during the Tyler Perry
I don't think we
temptation
will.
Temptation episode. Well, just because, like, I think that
because I'm a racist.
The movie is laying a racist trap for us by indulging in the worst racist stereotypes of, like, a cartoon sketch comedy version of, like,
black people.
Yeah, like, hairdressing.
They've all got
long
gold
fingernails.
Oh, they're all they want to do is dance and shake their butts and eat soul food, and they have long nails, and et cetera, et cetera.
They got
huge haircuts, and they don't understand anything about anything that's supposed to be sophisticated or classy.
Right. In this movie, directed by Robert Townsend, the man who made Hollywood Shuffle, the comedy about how there's no good roles for black actors.
Yeah, because he took him when he was in Meteor Man.
Yeah, sure.
He took the best role.
The guy who ended Robert Town, and hence that's how he got the name. Actually, it's like Howard's End, but for Robert Town.
I do
Town's
like that
End.
Idea, though, Stuart. Like, oh, all the best Meteor Men are going to white actors.
But
it's my turn.
As Dan, as you were mentioning while we were talking during the movie, because it was really boring, Robert Townsend started out and made a couple movies that got him a lot of attention, and since then it's been kind of a long slide with BAPS in it.
But yeah, he seems to be doing all right. He is getting a lot of television directing work, as many film directors are doing these days. You know, and TV's where it's at, guys.
Take it easy. This is a podcast about movies, Dan.
Yeah.
Okay.
We get it. We'll watch The Wire or something. Anyway, and he can always rely on his brother Pete Townsend for a little bit of money every now and then.
He patented the windmill move, so any other guitarist who does that.
Anytime
has to
you call Pete Townsend,
penny.
he says, this is what you want to do if he calls you. He goes, hi, this is Pete Townsend. And you go, who? Get it? Because you want to get him to hang up as quickly as possible. You don't want to talk to him.
I thought you were going to be like, hey, it's your brother, Robert Townsend.
You know that sound you've been looking for? About your generation? Anyway, should we talk about what this movie's about?
Does he play a fucking Who CD? What's going on?
I
CD.
I recorded that 40 years ago. Yeah, that's,
it's,
that's my song. I wrote it.
It's a song called Let My Love Open the Door. Like, okay. Later, Pete. Anybody?
And then he hangs up on his brother Robert.
Anyway, here's
fast forward to Bratz or whatever we watched.
BAPS. Now, Bratz and BAPS have a lot in common in that the names sound similar, and they're about ladies doing it for themselves.
Masturbating?
That's not what I meant. No. I mean, okay. I guess it's an example of ladies doing it for themselves. Because
I've seen a lot of movies about ladies doing it for themselves.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about those. Well, the podcast is on.
Okay.
So,
I'll give you a list later.
So, Niecy and Mickey live in Georgia, and they work at a soul food diner. They're waitresses. Mm-hmm. Bernie Mac runs the diner.
Yep.
And they...
He is a stern taskmaster.
Yeah, he stops by to depress us because he's left us.
By reminding us of the death that would occur years later.
Yep. You think in a way, every actor is reminding us of our own mortality.
Yeah, every actor by eventually dying... is just setting us up to be sad when
all
we see
too
the
human.
Except, of course, Martin Landau, who is a vampire. Or Das Vampir. He's a regular Nosferatu. Anyway, so they get fired because they are not particularly good. They don't have a good work.
They got fired? I thought that was just the end of their shift.
Or maybe they got docked pay or something. I thought they got fired. But anyway, they want to open the first combination hair salon and soul food restaurant because why not? They love hair. They love soul food. Let's make it happen.
And they love hair getting cut and falling in people's food.
Falling in people's, I guess, fried okra and things like
that. Sure, your collard greens, your cornbreads.
You got to give into the fantasy, red. Dan.
What?
You got to give into the fantasy. Okay, it's like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
You don't really think Chinese people can fly around, right?
Yeah.
What?
But you just got to accept it.
You just believe that it happens.
Yeah. It's part of the... I think we really have saddened, bummed Dan out. First we show him a dead actor, now we talk about Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
All his least favorite things. Human mortality, the work of Ang Lee. Anyway, so they see an ad and hear an ad and then see it again on TV for a Fly Girl contest to be a dancer in a new Heavy D video.
No kidding. World-famous Heavy D?
Mm-hmm. The heaviest.
Of the D's.
Mr. D himself, Heavy. Please, Mr. D lives in Florida. Call me Heavy.
Is that his dick? Is that what's heavy? I don't... Is that...
Heavy I don't. Maybe D? A heavy dog he owns? I don't know.
I don't, dinosaurs are pretty heavy.
Maybe he's a
the
dad?
The big ones, yeah.
Or is it like defense? Like Tenacious D? Is
like
it?
Doritos?
It's probably Doritos.
He's got heavy
when,
Doritos.
And when they pulled the sponsorship, he just shortened he just went to D. Yeah.
I think it's for Dormouse because he loves his favorite character from Alice in Wonderland.
His hip-hop artist, Heavy yep. Doritos.
Yep, it's it's for Deflator Mouse, his favorite opera.
Yes, Deflator Mouse. Heavy Deflator Mouse. He's watching it. He's going, oh, this character would be so much better if he was heavier. You know what? This opera needs some soul. Anyway.
Okay, so something about a Heavy D video.
So they want it.
Would you call that a MacGuffin, Elliot?
I would call it a MacGuffin, and I'll tell you why. Because
it never comes up again.
It's a total waste of our time. So Halle Berry sees this ad. She says, I want to win the $10,000 and be named Video Woman of the World or something like that.
Sure.
They go to L.A. They fly there to audition for this video, and the audition goes poorly. How poorly? So poorly, we're not even shown it in the film. We see
an aftermath.
We see them waiting online. They briefly irritate the other dancers online. Cut to...
And catch the eye of a lascivious Spaniard.
Aren't they all, Stuart? Aren't they all? A regular puss and apostrophe boots. But we cut to Halle Berry and Mickey just walking out, and their hair is all destroyed. Apparently they got into some fight and hit some girls with their hair. We don't get to see it. The movie deemed it
gapping.
Not essential. But it's so weird. It's like if Star Wars, if they showed us them preparing for the Death Star trench run, cut to them getting their medals, and it's like, all right, I guess they didn't want us to see the scene that was leading up to. That's
maybe it was because every scene up to this point was so chock full of jokes, they had nothing they could cut, and okay, they're like, fuck it, just cut this.
You know what? We're running long on time. We gotta cut all the scenes.
We can't cut the like seven male characters who show up and like lick their lips and like try and hit on them.
There's one guy
you can't cut the cavalcade of minor black celebrities. There's cameo.
There's one guy who you see in a club hitting on a girl and then you never see him again. It's like, all right, I guess that was just the one. I thought he was going to be a character, but he's just, you know.
Well, it's to add a little bit of character to this club to make it feel realistic, Elliot. Mm-hmm. That they're showing
the sort of club because every time you go to
a club, there's one guy who, while talking to one girl, is looking at every other wife's butt.
Oh, so it's Dan. What time at?
I think that's what he was doing, right?
He was checking out other girls' butts, yeah. I don't know if they were wives, but...
I mean, you don't know that they're not.
That's a good point. Okay.
We also don't see them. We're just assuming he's looking at women. They don't.
No,
actually...
the women walk by.
Really?
Yeah, you see women walk by.
Okay.
Anyway, it's a scene that has no bearing on what little plot there is in this. Anyway, they also have two lazy, no-account boyfriends who will not get off their butts and get a job.
Yeah.
But so they have to escape this life and go to L.A. They fail the audition. Uh-oh. Luckily that... The movie's not over. Luckily, the lusty Latin who saw them says, I have a job for you. Takes them away in a car. Asks, are you actresses? Yes, of course. Takes them away in a car to a huge mansion, which we see every single room of throughout the film. And each room is presented to us as if we've never seen the inside of a mansion room before. And while this is happening, there's the music that plays over it is like Happy Puppy Dennis the Menace kids music. The score in this movie makes no sense. It's like they just took an old
Alan
Disney
Silvestri
score.
Scoring Milo and Otis or something.
And just like, whatever. We don't have time to finish BAPS. Just throw on whatever score you can grab.
And the composer continues to work to this day, right? Making puppy movies or...
Yeah, yeah. The Puppy Bowl. He scores every year.
But the point is, like, all of this heavy D MacGuffin is basically... It basically all just serves to get the BAPS to Beverly Hills to a rich place. Like, what the Beverly Hillbillies dispenses with in a song at the beginning of the show is the first 20 minutes of this movie.
And the scenes are not particularly trim. This is a slow-paced, very lackadaisical
movie.
This is
a fat 90 minutes.
Every scene has a closing joke, and then a good couple seconds, like, the audience is going to be fucking cracking up. They're gonna be fucking
we
rolling.
We gotta provide padding. Or else we're gonna miss all the other jokes.
See, like the Marx Brothers, they took this out as a road show. And they, yes. They timed where all the laughs
yeah,
were.
Yeah, Night at the BAPSRA.
Yeah.
And they were like, look, each scene's one joke is so gut busting hilarious that we better make each scene 10 to 12 minutes long.
We turn the rest of the scene into a dramedy.
Well, yeah, when they originally tested the movie. People were laughing so much that nobody could follow the plot. They had no idea what was going on.
So they had
They're
to.
Like, we got to put out a special director's cut.
Yeah.
That's 84 minutes
long? It's weirdly as if Robert Townsend directed it, and then, like, a down on his luck Michelangelo Antonioni edited the movie. It's like, longer, longer, each one, longer. I want more ennui in these BAPS.
Like, I'm surprised none of the scenes accidentally caught the actor just wandering off camera. Like, cut? Okay, we can go.
We're done, right?
We no, good?
We're not?
We good, Rob?
Okay, I guess I'll just keep staring at the BAPS. Anyway, they are brought to this mansion where they are told by I thought he was going to be revealed as gay. A vaguely effeminate man that his uncle, Martin Landau, is right. dying. And his one true love, this old man... was his family's black maid when he was young, but their love was not to be. The family tore them apart, and so now, to keep him happy in his old age, he wants Halle Berry to pretend to be this maid's granddaughter, all grown up, so that Martin Landau can, I guess... It's kind of never really said what he's going to get out of this relationship, whether it's just, like, to relive his romance or finally... have sex with a black woman. It really doesn't. I'm not sure exactly what Martin Landau's supposed to get out of just hanging around with his ex-girlfriend's
I think this is the first time we've actually had gaslighting in a movie, right?
This is kind of real gaslighting, yeah.
That's really
because
awesome.
It's all an elaborate ruse.
Okay, as she's not the granddaughter?
She's not the granddaughter. There's a lot of culture clash comedy, comedy in quotes, as they meet up with the best character in the movie, the butler,
yeah.
named Manly, but who Mickey refers to as Alfred. No, his but name's not Alfred Manly.
It's not Alfred Manly?
No, she calls him Alfred because he's like Batman's
butler.
What,
do you
butler.
See his fucking birth certificate? Is that what they have in
I mean,
England?
He seems really ruffled when they call him Alfred, so.
But the most important thing to know about Manly is he's played by Ian Richardson, who was the star of the original British House of Cards.
Oh, and timely, yeah, topical.
We're recording this, yeah. of course, right after the second season of Netflix's American House of Cards.
Yeah, I guess BAPS must have timed it that way. BAPS knew we were going to be doing it now, so they got Ian Richardson in the
Look,
movie.
I, we just got to we got to tire.
Are fuck, you suggesting
we got to tire fucking ship to this House of Cards thing, guys?
And the one I will give it this
rocket.
Ian you Richardson? Think Kevin Spacey's going to go on to making a BAPS 2?
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah, it's going to be.
It's not the American
it's
version
set in America.
Of BAPS, right?
No, it's a gritty BAPS reboot, and then Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, it's called
sure, it has BAPS sitting on a ledge, staring at their fist in the rain.
It'll be BAPS Man Begins.
Yeah, sure. BAPS Man Begins. Of course, and Rat Fink a BAPS Boo. That's the Ray Dennis Bapsler version. Anyway, so I will say this for Ian Richardson. Like all British actors in crappy movies, he does a professional job and gives it his all. And there's one scene I genuinely laughed at where he was trying to get the attention of a clerk in a CD store. And for 1 second, that was funny.
Yeah.
So. Nice work, the late Ian Richardson. Is he still alive?
I'm not sure about that.
I think he died when that House of Cards fell on him.
Yeah, just Ian Richardson. Just email us if you're okay. How you doing?
Is that flophouse at theflophouse.flophouse.
Sure.
.edu/gov.
Just email us at obituaries at theflophouse.
Email us at ps.
Email us at .com. Email us at Ian Richardson. I'm alive. Don't worry about me at theflophouse.baps. / Google image search. .geocities. Rated R. So anyway, they get, they're going to be part of this gaslighting plot. Meanwhile,
so we, and we think this Butler character is going to be like the foil. He's going to be the bad guy.
No, but it turns out he's the rigid anti-black person who gets who gets won over and decides that he really likes them
almost immediately. After he sticks up, he stands up against the soul food.
They cook soul food for Martin Landau, who it turns out is the old man.
He's apeshit for it.
And now remember, this is a couple years after Martin Landau won an Academy Award playing Bela Lugosi and Ed Wood. This is 40 years after he was in North by Northwest. 3 years after he won an Academy Award, and now he's bapsing it up, just doing the old man given a new jump on life by younger person routine. It's terrible.
There's a scene where he is asking Halle Berry's character about, you know, basically about her grandmother who doesn't exist, or I guess exists but isn't her grandmother. And the difference in like Martin Landau's subtlety, his line delivery, and Halle Berry's over the top comedic, like
over the top stuffing food in her mouth so she can't be understood, you know.
I thought you were going to go to the fact that there is a scene where Martin Landau, of course, goes out on a shopping spree with the Peps.
And you know, that's the that's the scene that I assume was, it's the, that you need that scene. That's the obligatory
when
scene.
When Robert Townsend was pitching the movie.
When like, Martin Landau's pitching the movie.
Martin Landau's pitching
to Robert Townsend. Look, like, I love this Peps script. You'll be the perfect director for it. I don't know. It seems like I've been trying to make movies that really talk about the black experience in an honest way. No, nothing's more honest than Babs. Please, this is, you have to tell this story, Roberts. I'm an Academy Award winner.
Picture this.
Then he uses his fucking hip as a dressing room.
Yeah, because he's a vampire. Blair, Robert. Blair. Babs of the night, what sweet music they make. I don't drink. Babs. And so forth. Those are lines from Dracula.
Yeah.
Babsula. Anyway, so the man
played a guy who played Dracula.
I assume,
he did not play.
So, well, the other alternative is to pretend that he's really a morphine addict, like Bela Lugosi was. So let's just pretend he's a vampire. It's a lot more fun.
This is Elliot Kalin pulling a triumphant call to arms to all those Elliot Kalin voice haters out there.
Yeah.
We're making a lot of offhand references to horrible things that people have said about us in comment sections.
Well, look, we're thin-skinned. That's why we're in comedy. Anyway, so Robert Townsend was sitting there. He said, "Martin, I'm not sure if this is the right
movie." I thought we were going to talk about the movie.
No, Martin Landau said, "Take a look at this." Slammed his Academy Award from Ed Wood on the desk. "Oscar wants you to make this movie, Robert, because he wants a friend, and Babs is going to get me that Oscar." And Robert Townsend was like, "All right, I guess so, Martin Landau. I mean, you're a legend." And then every day, I assume on the shooting on set, Robert Townsend would turn to Martin Landau and go, "Fuck you. Why did you rope me into this movie, Martin?" And Martin Landau would say,
"I'm an imp.
Tales from the Martin."
This is the twist ending.
Twist ending to the making of Babs.
Wait, is that why Tales from the Crypt is Tales from the Crypt? It's named after the Crypt Keeper?
His name is Crypt K. Eeper. The K stands for Kevin.
But I like this.
It's Tales from
Kevin's a really strange name.
It's Tales from T-H-E Crypt. Thomas Heathcliff Edward Crypt. Anyway,
I'm still amazed at the idea that, like, the twist of it is like, "I've trapped you into making a terrible movie." That's the ironic turn that this
you
takes.
You know, I've already made Meteor Man, right? Like, I've made terrible movies. Well, I forgot about Meteor Man.
By the way, we've all been dead the whole time.
I don't think
that's true.
It's not true at all. Usually, aren't these twists
just possibly Ian Richardson?
Often involve like puns or like a play on words? Like, Babs. No, again, it's not a real phrase. The movie introduced that phrase and doesn't explain it till the very end.
You're just reading the movie poster you made. Because Martin Landau put the movie poster together.
Yeah. I've cast Halle Scary.
Too late.
Wait, too late. Barry isn't enough of a fucking joke.
No, Halle buried. How about that?
Yeah. Where did we get to in this movie?
So I don't even remember. So Martin, they basically become Martin Landau's friend. They make him soul food and he gets his energy back. They teach him how to dance. They take him on a shopping montage, which is a pretty fun shopping montage. Mm-hmm. But it turns out, and meanwhile, the Latin Lothario is seducing Mickey, the friend. Mm-hmm. But it turns
the thick one that makes soul food.
I don't like saying thick.
They prefer that.
Let's not.
They prefer that.
I'm not sure how to be offended by that, but I am offended by it. I'm not sure why I am specifically, but anyway. Meanwhile, it turns out the nephew has clearly schemed with the chauffeur, the Latin guy, to frame the Baps for robbing Martin Landau, but it doesn't work out. And I don't remember what the character.
It's really
name
an
was.
Elaborate frame job because he is making like he's seducing her while wearing some driving gloves, and then like tricks her into touching a safe,
into trying to open up a safe.
He's like, wouldn't it be sexy if you touched the safe?
I'm totally, I have a women opening safes fetish. But then later, Halle Berry and Mickey are in bed. They share a bed, of course, because it's like a fucking Lucy Show episode. And because this movie was made in the 30s.
Yeah, they both sit bolt upright with their little sleep masks on.
And fucking bandanas in their hair. Their
cucumbers over their eyes. But anyway, they hear a noise and they run downstairs. A robber is breaking in. It's the chauffeur. And he proceeds to stand there while they take turns punching him in the face.
Yeah,
never tries
like,
to leave, never fights back. He just stands there while they punch him.
While saying, like, that's not how Rocky punches. Rocky punches
Mike
like
Tyson.
This.
Oh, right, say, I'm going to punch you like Mike Tyson.
Sorry.
Yeah, because black people love Rocky. That when it comes to boxers, Rocky is the one that a young black person would really gravitate
like,
towards.
The great white hope, the Rocky.
You know who I can really relate to. Not Tyson, not Ali.
The Italian Stallion.
The Italian Stallion.
And anyway. In 1997, that's the movie that's on the tip of everybody's tongue is Rocky.
Rocky
Five. You know what 19-year-old movie I was thinking about?
Yeah, he's a regular.
More than
Ivan
that,
Drago.
Like 21-year-old movie. So they punch him a lot, and then the nephew.
They don't even punch him a lot, Elliot.
They
They're
punch
doing
him at least four
like,
or five times.
That's not a lot.
It's a lot for a movie
robber?
Like Baps. Okay. It's not a lot if this was American Ninja. If this is Fist of the North Star, it's not a lot. No,
it's not even one move.
No, but for Baps, it's a lot of punches.
Yeah,
considering no one else gets punched. Oh, no, that's not true.
Punch
it was one
the movie.
It was Hawaiian Punch, the film, the true story of one man and his devotion to punching. But anyway, so the nephew sells out the chauffeur, and then everyone just kind of keeps going
for
and
a while.
Hangs out. They throw a party. Everyone's friends. The butler arranges for their boyfriends to come back, and the boyfriends have changed their ways.
Yeah, off screen again.
Off camera, they have reformed. Halle Berry dances with one. Another one falls in a pool, and Martin Landau dies.
Yeah, you're really glossing over the.
There's not a lot of movie in this movie. What am I leaving out?
Yeah, it feels like after a certain point, they're like, oh, this is the time where they need love interests. I guess bring those other two dudes back.
It really feels like the movie was made up as they went along.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we did, like you were saying, like, oh, these characters' journey won't be complete unless they get some arbitrary love interests by the end of it.
And they couldn't think of anyone else because it's not like the fucking butler is going to marry one of them.
No, but that would have been,
been an interesting choice.
Now, there's a brave film. Yeah. Mm.
But before Martin Landau shuffles off this mortal coil, there are a couple of scenes where it becomes clear to him that the Baps are his only true friends in this world.
Oh, right.
And they're not in it for the money.
He offers each of them a check for $50,000, saying thanks for everything. And they
with that kind of money, they could start their business of haircutting and food preparation.
Put together, it's 10 times as much as they were hoping to get from Heavy D, who has a hilarious cameo as himself in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And by hilarious, I mean excruciating.
It's there.
I mean, it happens in front of you, and you're like, can I look away? No, I can't. It's like a Ludovico experiment. Yeah. Anyway.
Can I block up my ears? No, they're still way too loud.
But he offers them checks for $50,000, and they say, no, we're not in this for the money, and they tear up the checks, and he goes, I thought the only person I could trust was Lily, his long-lost girlfriend. But now I know I can trust you, Baps. He doesn't say Baps, but he might as well. Then he dies, and everyone's sad, and they have the reading of the will. And this is literally how it goes. His lawyer says, I, being of sound heart and mind, would like it incontestably known that to my beloved Baps, and they're like, Baps? And she goes, Black American princesses. I leave, and then the music swells, and we don't hear a single fucking thing after that point.
Yeah.
We don't hear what
it's all reaction
we
shots.
We just see reaction shots of the Baps going crazy, and then we see lawyer saying something, and then the butler is like, and all, everyone's thanking congratulating the butler, and then we see the nephew get mad and walk out, and it feels as damn as they're like, they had an audio problem on the set, on the one take they did of this scene, they just covered it in music. And then they're celebrating the end, which literally writes on with calligraphy, crosses out the beginning, and they've opened up their comfort food that's their soul food / hair salon. The butler now works for them as, I guess, their publicist. I'm not sure.
I don't think he's skilled in that field.
Traded in his conservative Savile Row suits for a white suit and all.
Because he decided
suit.
To look like one of the dirty, rotten scoundrels. And the lawyer is now also, I guess, their business partner.
Yeah.
Their boyfriends have a chauffeur business or have
if
a limo
she's
business.
Working for them at this point, the nephew has a serious case against them.
What I love is I didn't realize that you could make a will incontestable in court by just writing incontestably.
Yeah,
I give my money to.
It seems like more wills. You should just put that word in if that's all it takes. It's like, oh, there'd be so many civil suits that'd be avoided.
Or just into everything, you know. Yeah. There's I didn't know that when the Native Americans were writing those treaties with Americans, all they had to write was incontestably.
Like,
I want to steal your land so bad, and I can't do it.
The lawyer's like, oh, look, I wish there was something I could do, but they said incontestable. It is literally the legal system's magic word.
The same way that when you say "so sue me" to somebody, they have to sue you legally.
But yeah,
it's like a summoning spell.
And when you say "don't have a cow, man," they cannot purchase a cow or even eat beef.
But it's clear that the BAPS
or
and
some
their...
kind of cow man hybrid. I'm assuming.
No, they can't have. Well, it depends on how they emphasize it. Yeah, say don't have a cow man, then you can't have any of the Lost Cowboys of Moo Mesa, or that one Ninja Turtles character who was like a humanoid bull.
But it's clear that the BAPS and the boy BAPS are going to lose this money within 2 months.
The BAPS.
They're terrible.
It is a terrible idea, even though
and
Dennis
they've opened
Rodman
up like
there.
Three or four branches at one time. That's crazy.
Yeah, they're expanding too fast.
Yeah, come on. You know, have a good flagship organization, then franchise.
I mean, Dennis Rodman's there before his politics got in the way, right, guys?
This was before he became dictator's best friend, Dennis Rodman. The man, the one man who successfully got kicked out of North Korea.
I like the idea. Like, you say dictator's best friend, and I immediately think of a product. The dictator's best friend.
But what would that product be, Dan?
It's like a wrestling buddy, right?
I assume it's like a really strong deodorant. Because who's going to listen to your every whim when you're sweating?
Sure. I just thought of something like somehow like it's a tablet that automatically poisons the member of your family that's plotting against you. It can tell. Somehow it can tell.
So, what, like a batteries not included robot that flies around?
Yeah.
Exactly. So,
the GoBot.
So BAPS, guys.
So, thanks.
British Athenian politician sex.
This is for a movie where
nothing happens.
The stars, screenwriter, and director were all African American. This is possibly one of the more racist depictions of black people I've seen in a film. That is what I would say.
It goes a little too far in being cartoonish into a territory where it's like, this is uncomfortable. But hey, you know what? Maybe we're just being overly sensitive because we're afraid of being called
That's
racist.
Maybe, I mean, it was pretty racist against the white butler and Martin Landau.
Whites were also shown to be. Well, it literally is like it's such an old-fashioned thing of like blacks are funky, white people uptight. This movie should have been made in like 1976. Instead, it was made in 1997. I just kept thinking while we were watching it.
But that's
2 years
because
after
of
this
the
movie,
music.
Yeah, 2 years after this movie, The Matrix would be made. It feels like I'm thinking of movies from different centuries at this point.
Yeah. This movie was up against Fargo for Best Picture.
we forgot to mention BAPS was nominated for Best Picture. It won the New York Critics Award. But it was nominated for an award according to Wikipedia. BAPS was nominated for the Best Actress. Acapulco Black Film Festival Award, Halle Berry. Unfortunately, she lost. Let's see.
But she went on to win the Academy Award.
But not for BAPS.
Are you sure that's not just a BAPS acronym? Best Actress Acapulco Film Festival.
So it was the P in Acapulco that was.
You're saying it super weird. I don't know what you're doing.
I'm going to see who the winner
now,
is.
Now, and guys, as a podcaster.
And the winner that year was Vivica A. Fox for Soul Food.
Sure.
And as a podcaster and a listener of podcasts, I know a thing or two about over-talking. Mm-hmm. But the two leads of this movie over-talk more than anybody I've ever heard on a podcast.
It's like
a fucking mumblecore movie.
It's like His Girl Friday. They were overlapping dialogue. Mm-hmm. Robert Townsend saw His Girl Friday and he said, "I found my Baps style."
It took
style.
Like 25 minutes into the movie before I knew what the main characters' names were.
I think that might be partly the movie and partly how much attention we give to the movie. But look, there was a lot of talent involved in this film. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out this one time. It was the Skidoo of the 90s.
Yeah, definitely. So
thanks for making us watch it, contest.
Yeah,
listener.
Let's move on to final judgments on this movie. Is it a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you kind of like? Stewart's drinking, so Elliot, why don't you say?
I would say it might be a fun one for like a bunch of racists to watch and make fun of. I don't know. But I would say a bad, bad movie, but not even necessarily because it was like stupid or not funny. It was just very like slow and kind of dull, you know, for a movie that could have been. It sounds crazier than it was.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the characters just kind of hanging around the house, and there's at least like even when they do the classic confused by a bidet scene where a bidet
which is
squirts
amazing.
Everywhere,
and doesn't squirt everywhere. It's like a fucking fire hose.
To use that bidet, it would hurt you. You would have tearing. It was this Martin Lando likes
for the strongest anuses.
Martin Lando should have had a scene where he goes like, "Well, I like a good scouring of the rectum." That's why my bidet is set to anti-civil rights march fire hose. But it was just, even that scene like went on too long, was really slowly paced and didn't have a payoff. Like there's very few jokes for a comedy, you know.
Yeah, I mean this is
the first half of the movie. They're like, people will be laughing at their gold teeth so much we won't even need other jokes.
This is borderline good bad movie because it is extravagantly bad in a way that we don't normally see.
And you were saying kind of innocently bad.
Innocently bad, like it feels like a bad movie from the 40s got made in 97 or something. But it's you're right. It's too boring overall to like really reach the heights of a good bad movie.
Yeah,
Stu, what do you think?
Yeah. I guess it's gonna be a bad, bad movie. I feel like
listen to your heart, Stuart. You don't have to go even to the peer pressure.
I feel like the comedic tropes that this movie borrows from or borrows are better used in a little movie called Twin Sitters, and are used a little better. So if you're looking for like the idea of like the rags to riches Cinderella story.
Kind of a rich people, poor people clash.
Yeah.
That also has bodybuilders. I'd see Twin Sitters instead.
Twin bodybuilders babysitting twin rich kids. Mm-hmm. Is John Paragon in it? Yes, because he directed it.
Or Disorderlies. Go out and see Disorderlies.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is it felt a little bit, as Dan said, like Disorderlies, but without the fat boys.
They said, these fat boys are distracting me too much from the plot of Disorderlies. Get me the Baps. And the beer they drink, Babs Blue Ribbon.
Oh boy! So,
but yeah, I almost wish they had put more effort into this, and then it would have been a good bad movie.
Before we move on, I just want to put in a plug for one of our All Things Comedy podcasting network
siblings,
brethren, Farley Brothers Radio, which has comedians Kevin and John Farley, brothers, I assume. And host Carissa Costa talking about life, love, and all things Farley. I don't know what that means, all things Farley.
Keep revealing how little you know about this Farley podcast.
Maybe they're talking about Farley the dog and
Farley
for better, for better and worse.
Farley
for worse.
And
Farley, that's a movie, right?
Yeah. They're talking about iFarley, the kids' show.
No, but they have had
Farley
a lot
Ray
of...
Farley Ray Jepsen, Dean Popstar.
Yeah. They've had a lot of great guests. They've had David Spade, Norm Macdonald, Sandra Taylor, Andrew Dick, and Chris Kattan on the show.
You say Andrew Dick?
Andrew Dick.
Please, I'm trying to have a new image. It's Andrew Dick.
It's Andrew Richard.
Please, this is one of my serious roles. It's Andrew Richard.
Well, that was
this is my breakout into the legitimate theater.
When he was playing the butler in the reboot of Babs. It's me.
The stage version.
And
of
in
Babs.
The role of Mercutio, Andrew Richard. It's Babs the stage adaptation.
Yeah.
It's a drawing room comedy.
No, but check
out Babs the Musical.
Check out Babs the Musical on Broadway.
Never.
Well, it closed already.
Okay.
Someone had the idea and it closed off Broadway.
It closed in their mind.
Before
Farley Brothers Radio.
But yeah, since you can't see Babs the Musical, why don't you go listen to Farley Brothers Radio over at ATC.
On All Things Comedy. Your place for all things comedy.
.com. Mm-hmm.
Not All Things Considered. That's a different thing.
No.
Unless what's being considered is comedy, in which case, yes. Not the all thing.
No, we don't talk about that. That's for a different podcast, Ellen.
Yeah, our podcast.
Our weird religion podcast.
Weird.
Spaghetti Monsters, Cthulhu's, etc.
And so forth. Wait, I've never seen the Spaghetti Monster and Cthulhu in the same room at the same time.
Sure.
And he does have tentacle face.
That would be a really weird room.
Yeah.
It
would be non-Euclidean architecture.
Now.
A natch.
We move on to the next segment. Which is letters from listeners.
Mail time. Mail call. Call in the mail. Call it up. Hey, mail, is that you? I got the machine. Hey, mail, this is the Flophouse. Come on by. Give us a call when you're back. Oh, you just picked up. Hey, mail. Mail call. Call in the mail. Oh, I have the wrong number. Forget it. Let's call the mail and the mail call.
I'll give that song credit for being very different than the normal letter song.
I mean, I'm trying to branch out.
Yeah. Yep, he's the stodgy judge who just allowed it.
There's nothing in the rule book that says he can't sing a letter song.
So this first letter is from Clavy, last name withheld, who writes, "Dear Floppers, as you may be aware, the superhero fighting game Dishonored Gods Among Us is quickly running out of interesting characters to release as downloadable content. Two Green Lanterns? What on earth?
There's a whole fucking core of them."
Surely.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get that mad.
Surely.
when are they going to get to Gnort? That's all I want to know.
"Reaching for your magnificent creations, 5 head and 7 pounds for game inclusion isn't far off. Although their basic
motives...
You
put fucking Freddy Krueger in one of those games.
Yeah.
Bitch.
There's a little tribute to Freddy.
Yep. Sam Neill.
Rest in peace.
Although their basic...
Sam Neill. What?
Although their basic moves are pretty obvious, 5-head would be a hand-to-head brawler with moves like the old 2-3 and give him the fingers, where 7 pounds would clearly hit his opponents with a large variety of objects, all of which weigh exactly 7 pounds.
Yeah, just 7-pound weights.
But after this,
7-pound Tom weights,
things get more murky. What would their catchphrases be? What would their power modes be? What would their super moves and finishing moves be? Please clear this up and help to save the game developers from releasing yet more Batman skins."
So 7 pounds finishing
seven
move is
boobs.
Like...
Is that what you're going to say?
Whoa, dude. That's my job to make fun of you fucking up how you say things.
Yeah.
So 7 boobs. Like 7 boobs kills you with boobs. Duh, I guess. Whatever.
Just an udder, basically,
looks
at
like
that
the
point.
Worm is on the other foot, Moriarty.
Wait, why would... That doesn't make sense. Why are you feet covered in worms?
That's how the Napoleon of crime killed people.
Ah, I'll just bury you in this box of nightcrawlers.
Bamf indeed.
Not that kind of nightcrawler.
What are you talking about?
Oh, forget it. Anyway, finish 7 pounds is finishing move.
He kills you with a fucking jellyfish, right?
Yeah. That he throws a jellyfish.
And then
at
your
you.
Soul flies up, and it costs
your eyes
7
go to Woody Harrelson. And 5-head. What was it? His catchphrase and his finishing move.
Well, I don't know.
He
whatever.
Shoots you with
whatever you want.
Well, his catchphrase is 5 heads are better than one.
Yeah.
And
feel like maybe he would sing a very sad song about being an orphan, and then you would cry yourself.
You would die of sadness, yeah.
And he carries 5 guns, right? Not 6 guns, because
he
has 5 head going west.
Well, no, he has 7 guns, because he's got 5 heads, not 4 head.
Oh, that makes more sense. Yeah.
The math. I mean, I'm sure the math works out. I
don't know. Fucking some game designer will come up with
it. And when he plays pool, he goes, "I'm really behind the 9 ball right now."
this I feel like this is getting even more murky. The
anyway, his favorite movie is Cheaper by the 13.
What? Oh, I get it.
You get it? Yeah.
Now I get it. Everything's one more.
Sure, like Ocean's 12, right? Yeah.
Although he also likes 103 Dalmatians. Guys. This is his one more than 102 Dalmatians,
guys,
the sequel.
Sure. His amplifiers go up to 12.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's great.
Here's my problem with 102 Dalmatians as a sequel. We've already seen 101 Dalmatians. Adding one more Dalmatian is not very impressive. You would have to do about 202 Dalmatians in the sequel to even equal the impact of the first movie.
Have you ever considered how beautiful a coat made out of 102 Dalmatians would look?
Mm-hmm. It would be amazingly beautiful. I would like one, please.
Give me a minute. I got to go get these Dalmatians. Keep leading me on a merry chase.
Oh, boy. Okay, this...
So I hope that answered your made-up nonsense
question. Stuella DeVille, et cetera.
Stuella DeVille. Like, you were tired of waiting for one of us to come up with that, so you just threw it in there. So,
this...
That's your drag character. For your cabaret show.
This next is titled Non-Pornographic Flophouse Fan Art.
Is there such a thing?
I am a new listener to the show, having been inspired by John Hodgman's condemnation to discover for myself how terrible Elliot really was. Without passing judgment on Mr. Hodgman's taste, I have to say I've really enjoyed what I've heard so far.
Except for Elliot, who's terrible.
Maybe a little too much, as I spent the last week mainlining episodes like a reformed vegetarian with their first box of Sailor Chicken. Wait, after my marathon, I think I've
developed... I don't know what that means.
It's a Popeye's reference.
Oh, I see.
Oh.
Popeye the Sailor, I see. Mm-hmm. Popeye's restaurant is named after Popeye Doyle. Let's just get that straight.
You've just completely divorced Popeye from his...
Popeye's chicken is named after the effect of your eyes popping out of your skull.
Because it's so delicious. When you take a bite, you're like, huh, sproing, like a Tex Avery wolf.
Oh, I thought you were just like... They're like, pop.
Get them back in my head. It hurts.
My eyes. I can't even see the chicken. And it's so greasy from chicken grease. Can't get a good grip on my eyeballs to put them back in my face.
Yeah, why do you like this chicken place?
It tastes really good. All you got to do is secure your eyeballs in your face with fasteners beforehand.
Okay, like clothespins or what?
I thought they were talking about some kind of chicken that sailors eat, like, dehydrated or something like that. I don't know. It'll last a long sea voyage.
Okay. Well, we haven't even gotten to the point of this, but after she goes, after my marathon, I think I've developed a pretty good idea based on your voices as well as hints in the podcast as to what you all look like. As I'm too lazy to do a Google image search.
That's lazy.
Could you please take a look at the attached sketch and let me know how accurate my imagined podcasters are. That's from Vanessa, last name withheld, and I've got the sketch here. So this is what she thinks we look like.
So listeners should Google it.
Okay, so wait. One of us is a teddy bear, and the other two are ducks. Okay.
I think I'm the bear.
I'm guessing that. I can't tell if...
The duck with the glasses, I think, is you, Elliot.
That duck is way too tall.
And then there's there's like a roughneck kind of muscular duck.
There's like a skinhead angry duck, and that must be Stuart.
Okay.
Unless Stuart's the teddy bear and Dan is the angry duck.
So,
and then there's a cat. The cat could be Stuart.
Yeah, it's true.
But, you know, it's a pretty accurate sketch as far as the kind of shirts
Elliot
we
could
wear.
Also be the bowl of, I'm guessing, chips or some kind of caramelized corn.
Some caramelized corn. You put a fucking creme brulee torch to this corn.
Quit this podcast.
I don't...
It's with a chip reduction.
Now, you say that this is a non-pornographic drawing, but this is as close to furry flophouse porn with our clothes on as I think
of
thing.
I don't even want you to mention that for fear of the floodgates you're opening.
But thank you, I guess.
So nobody ever send us a picture of the house cat with his penis out, please. Let me just say that. Don't do that.
So,
it's like fucking bizarro over there.
So next up.
Well, thank you for the art. We appreciate it.
This is titled Intimate Encounters from Martin.
I saw that movie.
From Martin, I am not afraid of being fully identified, Bureau, who writes, Elliot's recent reference to semi-obscure X-Men character Extreme/Adam X prompted memories of excitedly meeting Dan and Stuart outside of Elliot's NYC Comic Con panel a year or so ago.
Oh, shit.
I forgot
about that panel. Thanks for coming to it, guys.
I was with my boyfriend and friend, neither of whom are listeners. And
sorry, it was a cough. It was not a laugh.
Sorry. Neither of whom were listeners and were puzzled by my happiness at this encounter and described one of you as, quote, super awkward, and the other
Dan.
As, quote, he's gay, right?
Stuart.
I'll let you
I don't know. It could be either one.
I'll let you debate who was described as what. Anyway, I wanted to ask what, if any, current comic book titles you geeks follow and if Elliot will be appearing again at this year's con.
I haven't been asked, but maybe that'd be nice. Someone's got it. Who doing a panel has to ask me.
I always assume that I'm the one being described as super awkward.
But you also could be gay.
It's true.
Whereas Stuart does get shy around people he doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a wild animal.
I don't know. He introduced himself to Hallie as a laid-back party dude.
But he knows. But
and
he
also
knows
a lot of boyfriends slash male friends describe me as gay for fear of my sexual prowess.
Yeah, yeah.
For just, fear of it?
Yeah, like there's an intimidation factor.
So they describe, I don't, okay.
What was the other, what comics do we read now?
So they say he's gay, right? So that she doesn't get any crazy ideas.
So comic books, though. Stuart and I, we'll both read The Sixth Gun.
Yep, yeah, yeah.
We both read Prophet.
Yeah, yeah. Brandon both, Graham stuff's awesome.
Yeah, the Manhattan Projects, mm-hmm. we both enjoy. What other stuff? I like Hawkeye, but you hate Matt Fraction.
I hate Matt Fraction.
Wolverine and the X-Men is a fun book.
I just picked up the second collection of Dial H.
Okay.
But that's not ongoing.
No, it's that was canceled.
And I mostly enjoy reprints of old comics. I have been buying up pretty much every... I think every, actually, EC reprint that has happened.
The Fantagraphics.
Fantagraphics have been putting out beautiful reprints of EC work.
I think I just have the Jack Davis one.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
But they're all grouped by artists, and they're all in beautiful black and white. And they certainly had the best stable of comics artists of the time. So that's
you're shocked at how great their stable was at the time.
Well, also, like, I'm shocked at just, like, how much... the general level of comics art has deteriorated. I know that there was terrible comics at the time, too.
I think that there's actually a lot of really good art going on in comics right
okay,
now.
Okay, But
EC, in terms of art, was the top of the heap at the time.
Yeah, I mean, just a group of legendary people.
Yeah.
But, to move
is
on.
Is Dan's favorite part
yeah.
of the wife.
Okay. And the Halle Berry from BAPS.
Yeah, Dan's like, oh, Halle Berry's butt is winning me over to this.
I didn't say
excellent
it in those
performance
words
from Halle Berry's hindquarters.
I'm
sure we could think of other comics that we like if we thought about it, but that's enough for now.
So this next letter is titled Arabic Popeyes. Dan.
Keep talking.
Tell Elliot it's from David, last name withheld.
But not my
tell
brother,
him,
right?
Tell him, yes, that David. Has he thrown a fit yet? Good, on to the letter.
Oh, my stomach.
This, by the way, this letter's from Sam, last name withheld.
Oh, so it's not from David, last
it's
name
withheld. It's a prank.
Oh, okay. Phew.
But he writes...
Best part of a prank, tell him it's a prank in the middle of it.
Yeah. Well,
he writes, well, it's better than like an Andy Kaufman-type prank where you never tell them it's a prank and people are just like, what happened?
Yeah, you take it to your grave.
I feel like there's a lot of email to get through while still maintaining that that prank. But he writes, hey, Floppers.
Well, you were the one who broke it. Don't get mad at me.
Specifically, Elliot. As I was listening through the Flophouse backlog on my flight to Amman. Amman?
How do you say that? Amman.
Okay. I was made a note of a fan letter from a Flop fan in Qatar who was eager to try Popeye's chicken. As I made my way toward Jordan, I wondered if I would be treated to the same experience. When I finally beat the jet lag and figured out the local area enough, I sat out in search of a Popeye's. The search was lasted all of 5 seconds because they're as common as McDonald's here. I was excited to give Elliot a translation and show off my Arabic skills to out-know-it-all, the famed know-it-all, but was disappointed to find that not only was the sign in English, but all the employees spoke fluent English as well. All I can leave you with is the assumption that the Arabic Popeyes sign read Bubbies, as there's no equivalent to the letter P in Arabic.
Hmm.
Just to provoke
Then how
more...
do they say hippopotamus?
Just to provoke...
No, answer my question, Dan.
God damn it.
Yeah, you're saying...
I like the idea that you think that the email would immediately give you a response.
Email. That. Scan. Enhanced by 30%. Now answer my question. Hippopotamus.
Just to provoke more response out of this letter, I also noticed that it has been hard to me to find food here that isn't doused in either ketchup or mayo, usually both. What are your thoughts on dumping ketchup onto an already perfect food like Popeye's chicken?
I mean, I would never eat ketchup on Popeye's chicken. That sounds wrong. I love ketchup. Don't get me wrong. But why would you do that? It doesn't make sense.
I mean, Ellie gets mad at me for putting
hot sauce on it. He likes ketchup-flavored potato chips.
You
can get ketchup-flavored potato chips
in
England.
You know,
say those things.
But I used to put ketchup on everything when I was a kid, but now I've come to realize that food tastes good without it much of the time. So
you don't just want to eat ketchup for every meal.
No. Well, like even a hamburger where you'd put a lot of people put ketchup on. Like if I know it's going to be a good hamburger, I want to taste the beef. I don't want to taste the
public
ketchup.
Service
sure, you just don't like ketchup with different
and let me
variations of texture.
I've learned that food tastes good.
And let me talk about another trend I'm not a fan of, mayonnaise on hamburgers. Which
not
if
a
you,
fran of?
Yeah, that I'm not a fran dresser of, but nannies. But if you go to California, you better fucking make sure they don't put mayonnaise on your hamburger. You'll have to ask them explicitly.
I like mayo on a hamburger.
Because they don't tell you they're going to put it on, but they
mayonnaise,
do anyway.
Or they'll be like, hey, this guy probably wants avocado. I'll slip you a free avocado in there.
You know, it doesn't say avocado on the extensive list of ingredients.
Mayo
but I'll
and
tell
beef
you what,
is a classic
gonna, this is going to be a surprise for your tongue you'll never forget. You'll be thanking me till the day you
I love
die.
All
your
the things
muscles are
going to
enjoy
about.
This protein. Don't worry about it, guy.
Everyone mm-hmm. loves this food that Elliot hates. Anyway, you're saying
avocado is filled with great, you know, healthy fats. You know?
Oh yeah, Healthy Fats, the recording artist / pool player.
they ground up Healthy Fats and put them in avocado.
I'm Healthy Fats. I'm not really very healthy.
I'm a walking contradiction.
So wait.
Avocado looks like Slimer given corporeal form.
So wait, last letter.
Okay, I don't know why you were. Yeah.
This one.
Wait a minute. It might be a bit.
This one is from David, last name withheld.
It better not be.
Elliot's brother.
Oh, God. Oh, it burns.
Howdy, floppers. First of all, I cannot express.
Don't take the fucking familiar with us.
I mean, he is my brother.
I cannot express how happy I was to hear Dan recommend the classic hockey documentary.
Hockumentary.
Sudden Death. During your recent RIPD episode. As I was listening, however, I heard Dan refer to the now raised Mellon Arena in Pittsburgh, where the film takes place, as a hockey stadium, at which point an all-too-predictable light bulb went off in my head where I thought, it's an arena, Dan, it's an arena. It was at this point that Elliot chimed in with, I think they're called arenas. A sigh of relief.
Oh, good. I finally live up to my brother's standards.
I was reminded of a moment a few years ago when Jon Stewart referred to Hillary Clinton as Wolverine because she was a woman of steel. As I watched, I thought, but Wolverine's skeleton was bonded with adamantium, only to see Elliot appear on screen and offer the same correction seconds later.
Based on a true story.
My conclusion, we are the dorkiest brothers in history. Either way, after hearing Elliot's on-air sports-related correction, I was finally reassured that all of my years of working and teaching had not been for naught.
My work on this earth is done. Goodbye. Floats up to heaven.
David Kalin died on the way to his home planet.
No! He was from another planet, I guess.
Of my eldest brother, I could not have been more proud.
Only brother. Also eldest.
Yours in dorkdom, David
Kalin. Oh, that's very sweet, David. Thank you. I love you,
nice,
too.
Very nice.
That's
letter.
A very sweet letter to end on. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah,
and
maybe,
thanks, Dave, for
maybe
writing
the healing can begin.
I don't think so. Dave, you know what? As a result, I will let you induct my son into being a Mets fan and never being happy ever in his life.
So this is the point in the podcast, though, where we recommend movies that we've seen, usually recently.
Or even just heard about. Anyway, so I heard there's this movie where a girl takes her boobs out.
It's called Guardians of the Galaxy.
I don't think so.
It's, no way, man. No way. No, seriously. They can't do that in a movie.
No, we recommend movies that we like instead of, say, BAPS. Pardon me. Well, I sneeze on
BAPS
the podcast.
You.
Thank you. Stuart, you have your phone out as if you've made notes. What movie do you want to?
He's just playing Candy Crush.
I've not made notes. Also, I want to point out that I
was frantically looking up that boobs movie I mentioned.
Is it called Boobs, the movie?
Yeah, I was looking at keywords, boobs.
You love
shirt
the body
off.
Part. Now watch the movie. Anyway, you're saying, Stuart.
I just want to point out that I earlier recommended Twin Sitters. You should watch that if you haven't. That is
a good bad movie.
Yeah, it's
that
definitely
is
a bad movie.
Very fun movie.
It stars two twin brother barbarians. You should check it out.
They're called the
barbarians.
Called the barbarian brothers.
No, I think their career is that they're barbarians.
They're not really barbarians.
Yeah, they're named after their career.
like Archer or Cooper or these are all names that are
waiter. Repairman.
These are all careers, I know.
Genre repairman.
Genre repairman?
Yeah, a Guillermo del Toro or a Christopher Nolan.
So I'm going to recommend a movie that you've all probably already seen, but you go
it's
see again.
Baps.
It's called, it's the Lego Movie. I saw it recently. It was great.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
A bunch of people recommended it on the Flophouse Facebook group and just in general.
Wow.
I'll go.
It was really good. If you haven't seen it, you should go see it. It's a movie for children that doesn't rely on a lot of fart jokes or just stupid cutaways. It's genuinely moving, and there's some great voice talent without being overly distracting.
Stu, are you saying I should Lego my opposition to movies based on products?
Now, you're making a reference to the Eggo ad campaign, which the Eggo movie is terrible.
You were saying, run.
It's just watching Steve Carell put his head on a pile of pancakes.
No, that's Dan.
It started its life as an Eggo movie.
No, he's saying,
oh, that joke made me so happy.
He's saying, run, don't Duplo, to the Lego movie.
No, this makes sense. Okay.
So I guess the Lego movie, you probably already seen it, but watch it again.
Quickly, I want to recommend two movies. Number one,
I'll count them when you say
is a documentary called Beauty is Embarrassing. It's on Netflix streaming. It's about the artist Wayne White, who was the set designer for Pee-wee's Playhouse, and then went on. I thought
Gary Panter designed the sets for Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Gary Panter was involved in that, but like.
But Wayne White was the main.
Wayne White. I mean, well, maybe I don't know how the
he
breakdown.
Didn't pay close attention.
I'm not going to dispute the documentary.
I don't know how the breakdown of it. I know that Gary Panter also was part of that. I don't know what the breakdown is. Like Wayne White, I know did a bunch of the puppets for it. So maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But and he was like the voice of who was the bully character who always came down from the ceiling.
Oh, that mean kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
The marionette.
But he also like late in his career. I mean, like, and he did things like also, like, he did the Georges Méliès kind of influence Smashing Pumpkins Tonight video. But then late in his career, he started doing these paintings that were just word paintings where he would paint on, what do you call it? Landscapes that you would find in thrift stores. And they're just sort of like funny, crazy words painted over these landscapes, but like kind of integrated into the landscape.
That's funny.
Like belch.
Yeah. But but he's a very interesting character himself. He's kind of one of these guys that I think like this group that you don't necessarily see in pop culture that much.
The Beatles.
But it's like a type of character that you don't see in fiction a lot, but exists in real life, which is kind of like this Southern hippie, and hippie like has like maybe a negative connotation to it that I don't intend, but
like foghorn leghorn,
but not like your aggressive hick, but like a laid back, like kind of live and let live type Southern guy.
But also not so much that, but like a counterculture Southern guy,
a hippie.
Like a Southern guy who's like has like kind of like has like crazy ideas and like this like crazy like counterculture creativity
like Jefferson Davis,
but still like
like Tennessee Williams,
but still has sort of like this like grounding that you associate with someone like who came from like a very rural area. And it's just an interesting sort of combination of traits that exist in real life, but again, you don't see in fiction. So it's kind of, he's a very interesting character. I recommend the documentary a lot. It's an inspiring documentary.
What's it called? Beauty's Embarrassing.
Beauty's Embarrassed.
Yep.
It's a BBC drama about a family law practice in the 18th century.
But I also watched The Seahawk. Michael Curtiz is
with Errol Flynn.
Swashbuckler with Errol Flynn, and you got Claude Rains as a very interesting, I think, bad guy in that movie because he's kind of
he's a
conflicted bad guy. He's an ambassador who doesn't necessarily want war to break out and has a lot of like familial feeling for his niece who falls in love with Errol Flynn. And so I feel like I like that in a lot of these old movies, you'd have characters like these Claude Rains villains who had very sympathetic sides to them, even though they were in opposition to your swashbuckling hero.
And he's not just trying to find like a magic amulet or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was before they thought that anything involving fencing also had to have magic or ghosts in it. Yeah. Or
a curse or
a prophecy.
The Pirates of the Caribbean series, I guess?
Caribbean.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Pirates of the Caribbean.
Those are two movies I enjoyed quite a lot.
I'll recommend a movie I enjoyed a lot too. Why not? That seems to be the theme tonight. I'm going to recommend...
Distance yourself from this.
I'm going to recommend an action movie from the 60s called...
It's called Action Jackson.
Called, it's called Action. It's not a movie so much as a TV show with Jamar, but...
there's not a lot of action in it.
It's a movie called The Professionals. This is not the sequel to The Professional.
Oh, that's a very good movie.
In fact, it predates it by nearly 30 years. Okay. But The Professionals with Burt Lancaster.
But it does star Natalie Portman.
No. Natalie Portman. So it's Natalie Portman with two words put into one word. It's got a great cast. Burt Lancaster, Lee Marvin, Robert Ryan, Woody Strode, Jack Palance playing a Mexican character, Ralph Bellamy as an old man, and Claudia Cardinale as one of two busty ladies in it. Who mm-hmm. wear...
Okay, what's this movie called again? So,
it's called The Professionals.
Called Boobs the Movie.
And it's one of these, one of many Westerns set during the Mexican Revolutions, the early 20th century. And Ralph Bellamy is a rich man who says his wife has been kidnapped by this Mexican rebel leader. He hires a group of adventurers, basically, two of whom, Burt Lancaster and Lee Marvin, used to work with this rebel yeah. leader when they still believed in something. And so they have to go into Mexico and kill roughly 300 guys and steal this woman back.
Well, that's also what
but
I
not
like.
Everything is as it seems.
Well, that's what I was going to say about that. Also, is a movie that has a more complex morality, I would say, than most modern action movies. Even though most modern action movies seem to think that they're all gritty and like have interesting moralities,
it's a movie in which the characters really have to
make like an illusion of postmodernism.
Yeah,
kind of. But it's a movie where the characters really have to make moral choices about mm-hmm. what's going on and what they're going to do. And Lee Marvin especially feels like he's at a crossroads. It's directed by Richard Brooks, who's one of these directors that was never like one of the legendary directors, but was a very solid, you know, knew how to make a movie. There's a lot of great shots in it of the desert that they're in.
And of busty ladies, I'd hope.
There's some great shots of busty ladies. And
there's a great shot of Busty Poindexter.
Busty Poindexter.
Is that like a junior version of Buster Poindexter?
That is the laziest burlesque routine. I'll just strip to hot, hot, hot. Just call me Busty Poindexter. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Look, we got to put this burlesque show together in 17 minutes.
Or maybe
choke me to death with a cat at the end.
Or you could be like a nerd stripper. And call yourself Busty Poindexter. That's a little less lazy.
Yeah, but you're still going to end up dancing to Hot, Hot, Hot.
Sure. Maybe playing an electric violin at some point.
Unless you're going to strip to a fucking Weezer song. The nerdiest music there is. But anyway, but it's a lot of fun.
To Undone, the sweater song, as your sweater slowly gets on.
It's pretty lazy. And very boring to watch.
Burlesque routine is going on 13 minutes.
Oof, this is...
That's the thing, dude. You're teasing your business.
This is the Craymaster cycle of burlesque routines. It's the Berlin Alexanderplatz of burlesque. I've been sitting here for 20 hours. Oh, she's it. It's still just up to her midriff. I haven't seen anything I couldn't see if I just saw her, you know, on the beach.
That's what makes it hotter. It's like old Hollywood.
Yeah, because old Hollywood's all about sweaters slowly unraveling.
By the end, you're totally straining at your denim, you know?
To get out of
to
your
To get out, yeah, because there's a denim seatbelt strapping you in, and you want to get away. But The Professionals. Look it up. It's a lot of fun. It's good, solid action-adventurism, as they don't really make them much anymore.
So, guys, with BAPS, we've completed our initials month here at the Flophouse.
What a weird theme.
Yep. So if you have an idea for a crazy theme.
We finished our Ryan Reynolds Halle Berry month.
Email it in.
To flophouse@baps.ripd.edu.
So many dots in this.
matrix.
So
what's the Flophouse email address, Dan?
Oh, geez. It's the flophousepodcast@gmail.com.
Okay, great. And people should listen to the Flophouse, right?
Yeah. Well, I think that we've already gotten them.
And they should buy
one.
A shirt with our faces on it, right?
Yeah, if you want that, you can go to astoymerchandise.com. But enough shilling for ourselves. We should sign off.
We barely shilled at all.
Let's shill for Farmers Insurance. Okay. At Farmers, they know that you need insurance. Anyway. That's not an official sponsor, just the first thing that popped into my head, probably because Al Madrigal used to do commercials with
Al
them.
Al Madrigal to Flophouse fans.
So anyway, enough gibberish for one podcast. For the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
Over there is Elliot Kalin.
And right ahead of me, I hope forever, is Stuart Willington.
Good night, everyone.
Willington?
Shut up, man. It was Wellington, okay? The light bulb. Here's the kind of filament I'll use. David Lynch is Thomas Edison in What the Fuck Were They Thinking When They Cast David Lynch? The movie, based on the book of the same name. Rated R.
Oh, wait. I'll save the business thing for after.
Business thing.
Business
thing. It's very loose.
What it's called is penis.
Let me give you the business thing.
Who wants
Before
it first?
You get the business thing, could you sign these papers?
I need to sign a waiver. A waiver. Take a drink, fellas. We're in for a long
roost.
Haul.
Roost.
Roost.